the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
No stopping me breaking barriers. I keep on crushing it till I am done. I didn't get here by accident. No, I've been gunning it since I was young. Better believe I'll be standing here. There ain't no moon that can outshine the sun. I didn't get here by accident. No, I've been gunning it since I was young.
To another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. We've got a ton to cover. Hockey's back. Going to talk a little football. Going to lead off some great stuff. But before we do that, bring in the guys. Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus.
What's popping?
Hey, friend. How you doing?
Seeing how I went 2-0 in the picks last week, I'm sitting pretty right now. So I'm doing
great.
There
you go. You bring in the other half of that bet, my betting rival for the last year and a half. The Statman, Russ Ivanek.
I almost hurt my eyeballs rolling so hard at him patting himself on the back right off the hop. How you doing?
Justin doesn't
sprained elbow.
Well, like I said, ton to talk about. We've got hockey coming up. I wore this hat special today. As you can see, it says North. It represents the one place Tyler Bertuzzi can't go. So it'll be a great time.
That's not the doctor's office.
We'll talk about that as we get a little closer to the show. But first things first. We rarely ever get we get to the important topics when we can, but this is still kind of fresh. It's still kind of new. So I wanted to make sure that we talked about it right off the bat. Former now Raiders head coach, former Tampa Bay head coach, Super Bowl winning coach, John Gruden has been fired, not fired. He resigned. I still think the fire was imminent, from Vegas after emails to emails to the Washington football team. I have to use this all right in terminology. It's a little off. He wasn't even coaching at the time. This was back in 2011 when he was doing commentary and all that, but have surfaced of him, without going into too much detail, just being a horrible person when you don't need to be a horrible person. Homophobic slurs, just things that were not necessary. Some things you just shouldn't say in general life. Now, look, it was 10 years ago. I don't care. That's still not the way you go about this. It's been kind of a mixed bag. Keyshawn Johnson, former player for him in Tampa, has said that he was never a good human being and all that. But on the flip side, you have a guy like Derek Carr who said, I love the man, I hate the act. Meaning, I know this isn't really him. I love this guy. And from what I've understood, none of the Raiders wanted him to leave. They wanted him to be the coach. So it gives you a little thing because, you know, there are players in that team who probably were affected by these emails because they, not directly, but in kind of indirectly, you know, crossed some boundaries for them. So when you guys look at this, Jay, I mean, Gruden had to go. I think that's the first question, the easiest question. I mean, am I wrong in saying that? That Gruden had to go. There was no way not to get around this.
No, you're not wrong in saying that at all. I mean, I don't care if it was 20 years ago. It's you don't act that way. And even like that one thing that kind of perturbs me, if Derek Carr says he loves the man but hates the act, is he implying that like he was doing it for show or status or just to have this like ill thought banter through emails? Like, so someone's got to press reply to those. And what's their response? So, like, the whole thing is, I don't care that people are like, well, we should be focusing on the Washington football team and their issues. It's like, well, no, but this is a byproduct of it, which there's probably other people pressing reply. So
absolutely.
You got to go. Like, that's – no one wants to play for you. And that's, like, the least of our concerns is how the players perform because of your coach is an asshole. But you're also an asshole. So – see you, bye. Yeah. No more. What is it? QB Whisper? What is the stupid show we had on ESPN?
Oh, Gruden's QB right. Camp. Yeah, Gruden's QB Camp. It's a yeah. little, and it's also a little more like, I mean, what Gruden did was wrong, Russ. I'm not trying to even remotely try to like validate what Gruden did or try to say like, well, he did bad, but it's kind of the lesser of the two evils because a lot of people feel that this is more a thing of he's kind of going to become caught in the crossfire because they're all a lot of this is after the Washington football team and the 50 plus years of horrible mistreatment by this team, by its owner, by its staff, that it was kind of like Gruden is going to be a sacrificial lamb on our way to really getting who we're after. And that is the Washington football team. Take that for what it is. John Gruden still sent these emails. You still, whether you felt that way or not, and I hope you don't really feel that way, Gruden, but unfortunately we'll never know. Whether you feel that way or not, these are still things you don't write. I can't write homophobic slurs in an email and go, oh, I was just saying that to say it. Well, don't say it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and not even to touch on all of the racist comments that he made about Demaurice Smith. It's look, I have to write emails all day. It's at least 60% of what I have to do for my job. And I fight over, like, did I say thanks too much in these emails? Right. I don't fight over, like, did I make a racial or homophobic slur in these emails? Should I send that? Like, no, this, I don't care if it was 10 years ago. Like Justin said, I don't care if it's 20 years ago. This is, yeah, it's ridiculous stuff. You had not that it should matter at all, but you have Carl Nassib on this Vegas team, the only openly gay NFL player. And that's your coach? Like,
but also, if you're Carl Nassib, whether he's like, because Gruden has come out in support of him, like when he made his announcement,
he was window dressing. We see.
No. I get it. I completely. But if you're Carl Nassib, how much of that, even that window dressing, are you able to really hold on to? Because in those emails, one very specifically is his talk about how the league and Goodell forced Dallas to draft Michael Sam so that a openly gay man could be drafted in this draft in the NFL at that time. And it's like, well, if you felt that way about Michael Sam, how can I expect you to feel any different about me, the first guy to actually be under contract and say, I'm gay?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know how Gruden gets to walk back into that locker room and anyone have a shred of respect for anything that he's going to say. You know, he's two-faced. If he says anything except exactly what he was exposed for, yeah, it is mind blowing to me. He had to go because no one was, who's going to play for him. And I don't care if to a man, every single person on that roster goes, hey, no, I wanted him to stay. I'm sure a lot of Ted Bundy's girlfriends didn't want him to go to jail. Like, you do something like this, you have to pay for it. This isn't cancel culture. This is consequences.
Yep.
And what bothers me as well, I mean, because we brought up Washington a number of times here, this happened 10 years ago. How are we just finding out about it now? An email has at least two people, the two and the recipient, or the two in the from, right?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think the from wanted many people to, you know, have access to their emails, because I'm sure if you open up that can of worms, I'm sure there's 10 times as many bad emails from the Washington football team as there was to the Washington football team. Jay, I know you had your hand up, so.
No, that's perfect, because my biggest thing now, of course, this is me, like, trying to figure everything out, right, from where we sit.
Mm-hmm.
If Gruden's going to get the hammer down, which he should, and say that in the 650,000 emails, there's like another dozen people, tell me you wouldn't be surprised if the NFL just draws a line somewhere and says, these people are screwed and these people are protected and none of these people are going to go down and these people are going to learn their lesson and they're going to curate this risk. They're going to manage this risk, which sucks, because like all companies want to do, they want to make sure they don't lose anything, right? But all these people should lose something, because if he thought that his email was private, and then the window dressing, he's acting a public way, that's even worse. You're hiding your hate and all your problems, and you think that it's safe to say it behind closed doors. That just means that you are a terrible person. Like, it. I'm out. Yeah. I want to know where they draw that line, because someone's going to be saved, and then he or she gets to do all that window dressing, and someone's going to know the truth. You know what I'm saying? I know it's conspiracy theory type shit, but they're not just going to go 650,000 emails, 300 people are in trouble. Like, they're not going to do that, and they should.
Yeah, they're not going to burn it to the ground, but God, that'd be a step forward at least.
It would show that you're actually out to get the people that do the wrong things. You can't send this message of, we're the NFL, we want to see equality, but then say, oh, by the way, it's almost really bad reference or bad way of describing it, but it's how I'm going to describe it. It's almost like the Lion King. Here's the Pride Land. The Washington football team is that dark, shadowy place we don't go to. But it's like, no, let's just eradicate the dark, shadowy place and make it open for all. That's just me. Before we get on to our Detroit Lions, I want to stay in this Gruden topic for one little second, because I saw something and I'm curious how you guys feel about this. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the fall of this have removed Gruden from their Ring of Honor. They've removed him from everything. He was almost like he was never there. Well, one, he was there. There's nothing you can do about that. But two, he won a Super Bowl for your team as the head coach. Russ, I get the reasoning behind it, but is it also a little fact of like, you can't erase history. You can't take the fact that Reggie Bush won the Heisman away. You could say he never won the Heisman. He won the Heisman. There's nothing you can do about it. So is doing something like this almost like a way of being like, ooh, we're going to get you with this one. And really it's like, no, I still won the Super Bowl. Like, I don't know what you want.
Mean, they're not taking away a Super Bowl win, no, but it's a place of honor, right? And it's supposed to be, look at these pedestals of our franchise, these paragons of what we're building. You don't want his name up there. No, I'm 100%. You got to give her. You're absolutely right. You can't erase history. But you don't have to celebrate it when it's bad stuff.
It's true.
Right? So he got his Skechers endorsement pulled. Cool. See ya. He got scrubbed from Madden as a coach name. Cool. Ooh. See ya. I don't care. Get rid of him everywhere. Yeah. I'm fine with it. Yes, you can't change the history, but I don't want to hear about it for Gruden other than putting that guy on a crucifix. Because this is ridiculous. And it's, God, I can't imagine it. I can't imagine how bad what we didn't hear is.
Yeah. It's true. And they're all saying, let the emails out. I do. Before we move on, Jay, the last question's for you. It's kind of a modern day word to use because it's I don't want it as a part of my vernacular, but I have to use it here.
Vernacular.
Is John Gruden pretty much going to be canceled? Are we done with John Gruden? Does this guy ever find a way to get back in the NFL, whether it's a office position, a sideline position, or even a booth position hosting something?
I mean, if I'm the employer, the answer is no.
Okay.
In my world, is someone going to say from his PR side, hey, do all these things and say all these things, they're boilerplate, and someone will forget? Yeah, someone will probably do that, but I wouldn't employ him. I also don't think, like, I think this is an appropriate cancel. I understand there's cancel culture where it's this whole other thing, right? But this is more like, sir, you are an asshole. Like, you don't get, there's no redemption from this. Like, he's got so much, like, that was 10 years ago. Think about what he hates now and what he's saying in his private life now. Like, to feel like he sits in some superior throne of sexism and racism and equality, like, he's not. So if I'm the employer, no, I don't even sniff the resume. I don't care that it's a Super Bowl. He doesn't get it.
No. I the difficulty is, like, I'm trying to remember other coaches that have been in this situation. And, like, Mike Babcock comes to mind, and he got another job like a year later on a major TV broadcast. And now the sins weren't as bad, but hey, sins are sins. Right. Sure. So he shouldn't have gotten that job so quick earlier. But I think what's going to quote unquote save other NFL teams and possibly college teams from making the mistake themselves is Gruden's kind of at the end of the road anyways. He did his original coaching stint, and then he went to the booth, and then he came back for a coaching stint again. Like, that's, you don't see that long of a career of a coach. If we were maybe talking about at most 5-10 more years of him, even if it went really, really well in Vegas before he rode off into the sunset anyways. So here's your early retirement package, jackass.
Well, you know what you could do with them? Just like Bezos and Shatner just did. Just put Snyder and Gruden in a little ship, and just, it doesn't come back.
Send them to Mars.
First long expedition. Absolutely. Yep.
Chucky to space. I'll pay for the ticket. Let's go.
The movie writes itself. Look, we'll see what happens with all of this. Obviously, I agree. I don't think we see John Gruden in a locker room or in a press box anytime soon in the NFL. Do I think someone will get him? Yes, but it'll be one of those smaller companies that know putting John Gruden will get the attention to kind of bolster. But John Gruden's never going to get a meaningful job in this NFL anymore. So we'll see what happens with it. Moving on, another week, same results. Lions fall 19-17 to the Minnesota Vikings on a surprise, surprise, late game field goal. Now I'm going to be straightforward with you guys. I've seen some of the highlights. Unfortunately, some annoying person decided they wanted to have a party the day of this for their soon to be, a baby shower for their soon to be child. So I missed the game because I had to go to that. Congratulations again to Russ and Mana. Yeah, but I did watch the highlights. But to me, this one I think almost hurt more than the Baltimore one, because this was one they had a chance. They did everything right. They go for the 2-point conversion. Goff is quoted as saying he had never thrown that route combination before that play. That receiver may have caught that play or that pass in practice. It was never from Jared Goff. So that shows you the gamble right there. You get the 2-point conversion. Again, we fall into this thing of, I don't think the Lions know how to play defense late in the fourth quarter when teams have to make up large chunks of yardage.
No, it was zone coverage. It was zone coverage on that entire final play or that final drive. Just, okay, let's just get in the middle, catch the ball. 30 yards, 40 yards, 30 yards, field goal, done. It was dumb. And on top of it, I think if Dalvin Cook plays this game, because Madison was in for most of the snaps, we're having a different conversation. It's not a chip shot field goal to win the game or a long field goal to win the game. They rested Cook, even though they didn't need to. They got a bye week next week, so they're just making sure he's extra healthy. I think if Cook plays, we lose even worse. But they didn't play good. They didn't play well. And on top of it, Jared Goff had another fumble. Another freaking fumble. Trying to mishandle the ball. That's disgusting. I didn't know the actual number, and that's disgusting.
It's the most in the NFL. And to make it worse, he's actually, and this is my favorite stat of all time, he's tied for fourth in the league in fumbles recovered. That's how often he's fumbled.
I hate
Darius
him.
Leonard is the only defensive player who has recovered more fumbles than Jared Goff has.
I'm done. Tank. Get rid of Goff. Give me anything. I'm done. Put in blah. I would rather have blah than Goff right now.
It is. It's not great. It's not great. But as you look at this, guys, this is a team that, for better or for worse, one or two games here or there, we can say otherwise. This is a team that has found a way to be in multiple games late into it. Now, again, story of a two-half team. But overall, this is a team that I said it earlier today. I was taping a show for the weekend for the station. And I even said, I think the most telling thing is we have managed to be in most of these games, and Swift is our leading rusher, right? Or leading pass or receiver right now. Yeah. Leading receiver right now is our running back, and our backup running back is our leading rusher. So this is a team that, when you look at this offense, they have their franchise starting left tackle, their franchise starting center. Both are two, arguably the two best players on our team, not playing right now. You have a rookie who's playing both tackles, apparently, because they don't know where they specifically want to stick him and keep him. You have no number one receiver to speak of. Defenses know we want to go to TJ Hockenson. So right now, our two best players on offense are our two running backs, and only one of them is really doing a lot of the rushing. So I think it's a very telling fact for that this team has managed to even be remotely competitive in these games.
Absolutely. I mean, they've covered three spreads. Mm-hmm. It's abysmal, the overall record, but the record against expectations is actually not bad. And for whatever else is happening, and God, it's not good, this team does not quit. At the very least, we can say Dan Campbell has this team ready to attempt to play four quarters.
Or cry.
Or cry doing it. I will stand here and win, or I will go down crying. They may not do all four quarters well, as we've seen, but at least it's not an effort thing. And I can't imagine, like to Eric's point, that these two running backs are the best players we have in here. That's with, at best, 3/5 of the offensive line working. Yeah. And now it's even going to be less than that this next week. Yeah. But it's impressive, and it's exciting for what might happen when that offensive line is actually what it should be.
Absolutely.
So then Jared Goff doesn't have to be the fourth most sacked quarterback in the league. That'd be nice.
Well, he's in Detroit now. Sacks come with the territory. I want to get to the predictions for this game, but I just don't want to get too far away and then come back. So before I do, kind of made the rounds here in Detroit, kind of made the rounds on ESPN as well, was Dan Campbell's press conference following this loss, where Campbell was, safe to say, an emotional person. One, I want to, it's almost a two-parter here for me. It's one, I want to say, I enjoy it for the fact that if you look back at the last six coaches we've had since, you know, 2000, I don't think any of them knew what emotion was. You had Rod Marinelli, who was just checked out. Jim Schwartz, who I think thought he was tougher than most of his players. And let's be honest, the teams he coached, he probably was. You had Jim Caldwell, who, for all he had in the ability to coach this game, I still think it's insane that we're talking about other head coaches after Jim Caldwell at this point, but he had no emotion and he had no ability to, like, he was the most monotone human being I've ever met in my life. Then you have Matt Patricia, who came from the school of Bill Belichick, except he's not any good at being Bill Belichick. So again, you
fundamentals.
But now you have Campbell, who's very emotionally takes these losses really hard. And my thought is that this guy's not that far removed from his playing days. He hasn't played in a while, but he's never left a locker room. Like, most of these guys retire, take a little time off, and then they get back into the game. He literally hung his pads up and grabbed a clipboard. He has not taken any time away from this game. So I think for him, he still looks at these these losses like a player. He knows what it's like to go out there and give 110 and feel like you did everything you were supposed to do to get that win and then not get that win. So I put the question as, like, does Campbell's emotion make it easier to root for him? And for me, the answer is yes. It makes it so much easier to root for him because, one, it tells me as long as I see emotion on this guy after a game, he's still invested. Whether it's upside, like happy emotion, like he's ecstatic for a win, or it's moments like this where he's down in the dirt. But two, if he's the guy, I won't say like when he becomes the guy, I'll say if he's the guy, because we still have a ways to go here. But if he's the guy, it's going to make that winning season, that first playoff win, that fingers crossed we one day get Super Bowl appearance, that much more, seeing him be the guy that we're talking to, because it's going to mean that much more to him when he gets those milestones.
Well, it absolutely will. And it's, seeing all of this emotion, it validates the whole kneecap era at the beginning, where I was worried that, like, that was just him putting on a show and that this shtick was going to get real old real fast. But it turns out, no, that's just Dan Campbell. And I'm not sure he did take off the pads, to be honest with you. He is living and dying with every single game, and you can see it on his face. And he's going to look 73 in 2 years with how this team is aging him. But it makes him easier to root for, and it feels more genuine, and it alleviates my concern that we were just going to get sick of this bizarro guy doing like Cosmo Kramer type shit every week. Like, no, he's not afraid to be emotional and raw, even in the pit of misery, as Caldwell liked to call it. So that it's relatable and it's nice, but damn it, I could use a win.
See, that's the damn it, I can use a win is where I fall on this is I'm already over it. I don't need the theatrics anymore. I don't need the tears. Dan Campbell, this is great. Dan Campbell better start crying about which players are screwing up and pointing them out, or calling out a group of position groups or offense, defense, line, secondary, whatever. Like, he's fallen on the sword for his team, and I get that, and it's commendable, and people are probably going to appreciate that in the locker room. But eventually he has to be the coach and not the player. And he's being too much of the player on that stand. I need him to be the coach and be like, Jared Goff has to do a better job maintaining the ball. Our secondary needs to do a better job not playing zone in a winning drive for Minnesota. I need accountability out of him. He's not on the field anymore. So it might be cute that he cried, and I might be picking the Lions to win this weekend off of that raw emotion. But I need him to be a coach and hold his team accountable. Not that the tears got to stop. Cry about your players, not about yourself.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Jay, you kind of led us right into it. Like I said, we got a lot to cover today and a little time to do it. So predictions, Cincinnati Bengals. Right now, the Lions are plus 3.5. So I want to ask you both, when you look at this, I think when we started this season, I think we all had this as a circled date that could be a win. We'll see what happens, but could be a win. Jay, I'll let you go first here because I think you kind of tipped your hand.
I did. I told you guys about the sacks with Goff. Well, guess who's tied with Goff with getting hit as much as Goff? That would be Burrows. Burrows gets bailed out by Ja'Marr Chase a lot. But Burrows also holds on to the ball to then make the mistake. And he's made some very, very, very ill-advised passes this year. I think that opens up the door for Hockenson to have a game and Swift to have a game. That's all we have. You know, if we're going to just check down to Hock and go 8 yards at a time, great. Hold on to the damn ball, Goff. I think we eke one out here. And I'm going to take the cry job that Dan Campbell gave this city last weekend to get our one and only win on the year. And I'm going to take a 30-24 win against the Bengals this weekend. And to prove a point, I already put money on it. So I have the Lions winning this weekend.
Of course he did.
We're not going to talk about them later, but I have money on it. And I think the Lions are going to win. This will be the one win we get is against the Bengals.
Okay.
All right. Rusty?
So prior to the season, I would have said the Lions offensive line would have been able to slow this game down and control it enough to get like a 19-17 win. Without that old line, or at least, you know, without the corpse of it being shambled around here, the Bengals' advantage at the skill position really starts to show out. The wide receiver, they've got three wide receivers. I think that would be the number one wide receiver in Detroit, right? The running back group's comparable at the very least. At the best, you might say that they're a little bit better. Their offensive line still sucks, though. So it's going to be sloppy. There's going to be a lot of sacks. There's probably going to be some turnovers. I'm expecting two. I'm going to call here. Here's my bold prediction. Two defensive touchdowns in this game. Yeah, two. But it's a 28-21 loss for our Lions. Sorry, Big Cat Showdown doesn't go our way. I can't pick them to win until they actually do something to not break my heart because I've been hurt too much. But my question to Eric, as Eric starts, Burrow or Goff, who do you have more trust in right now?
Well, one, I hate to break it to you, but a win would not break your heart. So you're kind of acting against yourself.
They have to win for me to pick them to win in the future. Yes.
Me personally, see, it's tough to say because on equal playing ground, like if all things are fair, I think at this point I take Goff just for the experience. But if you're telling me with the offenses they both have, it's Burrow and it's not even close. He's just got more talent on that offense right now for him in usable positions. The offensive line, when healthy, I give to the Lions all day. But at the end of the day, you have receivers and tight ends and backs in Cincy that are effective right now. Give it the Lions a couple of years to get a couple of receivers there and, you know, shape a few things. I think it's very fair and split down the middle. I'm going to be the tiebreaker here, obviously, and I'm going to say that I think it's a win. I think the Lions get a win. Let's go. I do. There's no 0-17 this year. I think the Lions get a win. I think that if they can, like Jay said, if they can get to Burrow a couple times and make it a little tougher for him, I could see some, not, he's still technically a rookie because he missed half the season. I could see a little bit of rookie, you know, rookie eyes, maybe make a mistake or two. And on the other side, this is pretty simple and straightforward. Give Goff the ball and just Goff clock management, manage the ball, go on these 7-8 minute long drives that just eat up clock and destroy their chances. That's when we've been most effective, is when we take the ball out of the other guy's hands and don't give him a chance to burn us. So if we can do that, I think they get a win. I liked Jay's number. I'm going to go right in that 30-24 vicinity for the Lions. So we'll see what comes out of it. We will. Now we'll talk about football that's actually been good here in Michigan. There's a three-headed monster in East Lansing. Woo!
Wait, say it again. Say it one more time. Say it for me one more time. Say it again.
And we're going to talk about Michigan football now.
There it is.
Right now, Michigan State has – I said it to Justin the other day at the party for the person who will not be named.
I'm right here.
I think Michigan State – and, Russ, you can chime in on this here. I want to get your opinion. I didn't say it to you. I just said it to Jay while we were waiting for you to get there. I think that right now Michigan State has the best running back in the country in Walker right now. Thorne is playing very good. Thorne is playing above what I ever expected out of him. He has never let them get out of games with his ability to manage and to do the right thing at the right time. It helps when you have a big back, you know, like that. 200 plus yards rushing is never anything to cry about. But, oh, by the way, you also have a big time receiver in Naylor who, talking to a friend of the show, Sean Belegian, earlier today, he said Naylor could have gone one of two ways, and he's going the better way. Naylor, for a while, looked like he was going to go the way of, like, Farmington Harrison legend Mark Dell, who really showed up in Michigan State, never really did what everybody expected him to do in Michigan State. And Naylor seems to be going that other way and actually becoming a receiver that is go-to, that is effective. So it's a look, that offense right now is very, very scary. That's I'll say right now, as we get closer to this showdown, that's an offense I don't want to see against Michigan, because that's an offense that could beat Michigan. They just go completely against what we want. We want slow, grinded out football. And Michigan State at this point has the ability to score at any point. And it's very, very scary. It's very, very scary. But Russ, before we get to recapping it, where do you sit on Walker as the top back in the country?
I'm completely fine with it. He's got more than 100 yards than the next closest guy. Yep. And that's with the cupcake games on the schedule where you kind of ease back. Like he's still 16th? Yeah, 16th in yards per attempt rushing in the nation. Like this is unreal stuff going on here. As a Michigan fan though, I'm not as worried about him as I am about Naylor. Michigan's built to handle a running game for a team that wants to run against you. A guy like Naylor who could just take the top off at any given moment, that makes it harder to cover Kenneth Walker as well. Not to mention what he does on his own. Like that he's going to be a bigger problem.
And that's more what I was referring to, is 9 times out of 10, you don't see it's the balanced attack. It's a team that's built to pass or built to run. But that's the thing. You have to commit to that run every time because Walker has game-breaking ability. But the problem is you can only commit so much to that run because there's still, like you said, a guy that can go over top. And make it it's almost what I thought potentially we had the possibility for with Corum and Haskins and then Bell on the outside. You still had that ability. So this is weird to say because I usually always favor Michigan in this scenario. I am not comparing Peyton Thorne and Cade McNamara right now because they are not comparable at this particular point.
Appreciate that. Appreciate your honesty.
But,
I like that.
But I you guys have what I think Michigan was really going for with Bell, Corum and Haskins, and then Cade. You guys have right now. It's a very great win. I believe it's 31-13. We're kind of scrambling here because my internet is choosing to fight me right now. So 31-13 win for you guys. Jay, I guess as we look forward to this upcoming week, that 7-0 going into the matchup is still very, very possible. How do you feel about this upcoming week?
Yeah, Indiana is going to be fun. Indy allows the second worst points against the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. You pair that with us who relies on the big play a little too much, we're going to take the top off of that as well. I think Walker's got a great shot at this Heisman right now. I think the running back out of Texas, I think Robinson is his last name. He's got some nice numbers too, but it's not what Kenneth Walker's doing. I don't know what even Indiana has on their offense. They lead the conference in attempts. They almost lead the conference in attempts, but then they're at the bottom of completion rate. And they're not going to have Penix at all either. So I don't really know what Indiana is. I know we're going to win. My biggest issue though, and I do have an issue with Michigan State, they are just about 33% on third down against Big Ten opponents, which is not going to cut it when we get to Penn State, Ohio State, and potentially Michigan. That's got to get cleaned up. It's my only issues on third down. They're abysmal. We play Western Kentucky and whatever the Hilltoppers, Bottom Toppers, whatever they were called.
Hilltoppers.
We were like 70-80% on third down. Third down against the Big Ten is ugly. I don't like it, to be quite honest with you. But this is going to be pretty much an easy win. I'm going to take the over as well. We damn near clear 38 points by ourselves, and the spread or the under over is at 48. So I'm going to take the over on that. And I'm going to take a 38-9 victory this week.
Okay. I like that. One, I will say, if ever there was going to be a year that running back is possible to win the Heisman, it's this year. There's quarterbacks just are not jumping off the page this year to try to win the Heisman. So this would be a year. I agree. The only thing that worries me is I just get really afraid that Michigan State, you got the bye next week, is just kind of looking past Indiana. Because you know Michigan's on the other side of that. It's a rivalry game. Yeah, but you also got that week of preparation, that week of break. And it's like on paper, Indiana should be the team that you look past knowing, okay, just show up, do what we do, get it over with. I'm not predicting a loss here by any means. But what I am saying is if there was a game that worried me a little more than it should worry me for State, Indiana would be it. Because it just seems like every year Indiana goes in and throws a wrench at somebody. And they're just not ready for it. Now, I'm not saying they lose every year, but it just makes it tougher. Michigan's had it plenty of times. You said
with Penix. With Penix, yeah, but without Penix?
Just in general. I'm just saying, like, I know these games. I know these games where the more important things are within your reach. It's not 6-7 weeks away. It's 2 weeks away, and it's a bigger game. It's one of those games that the day the schedule comes out, it's hanging on the board in the weight room. You've circled it. You're watching it. You know it. And it's just easy to look at Indiana and go, you're a football team, yes, but you're not the teams we care about. You notice you just mentioned those teams. Those are the teams they care about. Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. Those are the games that actually matter because those are the games that if you win them, you're going to have a lot of success. You're going to win the Big Ten, and you're probably going to be playing in the college football playoff. So those are the games for all those teams. Ohio State circles those three. We circle those three. It's just how it is. So it just worries me that I'm looking past Indiana. That being said, I still think it's a W. I don't think it's a close W. I see it as more of a 28-12 kind of game. I think Indiana will get a couple field goals. They might even scare on a drive, but Michigan State's rounded enough right now to be able to handle it. So I say 28-12. Michigan State gets through, goes into the bye, undefeated going into Michigan State.
Long story short, I also have them undefeated here. A spread of 4.5 is a joke. It is insult. The only time Michigan State's had a game within 5 points was Nebraska. In Indiana, you are not Nebraska. We're not even close. I've got 35-20, and the 20 is a lot of garbage time. Couple scores in there to bring it back a little bit closer. Because it'll be over by 5 minutes into the second half. Roughly is what I'm saying, and that's when the starters will get pulled because Michigan State. That's when they go, hey, you know what? We've got the bye week coming off. We'll get everybody rested, and I hate that they're going to be in the position to do this.
Yeah,
and then just full on road to 10:30 here, starting very early in the second half. It's going to be a blowout. It's who on Indiana scares you if you're Michigan State? Nobody. And we just have these three guys that we were just talking about in Thorne, Walker, and Naylor that. Indiana doesn't have an answer for. It'll be over quick.
Absolutely. It's just, like I said, it's one of those games where I hope the upset game doesn't even ever come into play. I hope it never gets that close. Yeah. I personally would love to see the 7-0 versus 7-0 because it's the first time in a long time. If they're both 7-0, they've both played the same teams for the most part. This is equal playing ground. This is where we really find out who the better football team is. It's a lot harder to do that when, a 2-4 Michigan State or Michigan team comes into a winning record other team. And then it's just like, okay, that's upset. That's a 1-in-a-million fluke off. 2-7-0s is a big thing. So on the other side, title says it all. That was a close one. Michigan squeaks out against Nebraska on a field goal late. Russ, I'm going to be pretty quick about this. There was nothing major to kind of write home about on this one. It was an ugly win. I said it. In a tweet, I never felt comfortable from the beginning of this game. It was just always awkward. So I'm going to lead it off with the best thing for Michigan is they have a bye this week. They have a week. They have a week to rest, to maybe get some guys who are dinged up a little bit of time off. And they have an extra week to get Cade mentally prepared for the backside of this season, because you are right now an undefeated team, top 10 in the country, with a potential to win some football games and potentially be playing for games that matter down the road. Mm-hmm. So my big thing of all that, we could recap the game if you want. To me, There's not a lot to recap other than Moody. And oh boy, do we have Moody. So my big thing here is I've never been more happy. A bye week is coming and I don't get Michigan football for a week. I can live through it.
Yeah, it's a good time. Near an ideal time. Next week would have been more preferable, but hey, next week's a home game anyways, so you get to sit in your stay in your own bed for 2 weeks.
Could you imagine the death anticipation if both these teams had bye weeks the same week?
I would love it. I would love it. I'm here for it. Give it to me. I mean, the only takeaways I really had from the game worth mentioning are two things really. That Cade McNamara, 38 passes. We found out he is not a scalable solution. He only gets less efficient the more he has to throw. And two, this team isn't as fragile as I was afraid it was going to be. They came to a team with a bad passing or not good passing attack. You always wonder how are they going to come back in games late when they have to. And they found a way to do it. The defense for the first time gave up 3 scores in a game and they ended up sealing it at the end. They've got more inertia to them than we thought. It's not going to be as easy to knock them off the game if you just take away one or two options. And hey, the running game still showed up. So yeah, it's a good time to get healthy and get right. And whew, at least you won. My question to you guys, though.
Well, real quick, Rick, I know you have a question. Yeah. I want to ask you this real fast because you pointed something out and it was I had it circled with, you know, 2 exclamation points. Mm-hmm. Were you ever more relieved in your life to see Cade turn the ball over and then be able to see how he can react afterwards?
It was good to know. I wish we didn't figure that out in a 3-point game.
Exactly. But I would rather figure it out against Nebraska than trying to figure it out against Michigan State 7-0 or Penn State, or even if we made it that far, which would be a phenomenon, him to have to figure it out against Ohio State. Right. I want him to figure it out in a time when we at least have a possibility to recuperate if we need to recuperate.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to go full, hey, the hardest pressure makes the hardest diamonds on you here.
Ooh.
But it's nice to know that he has an answer, and it plays into they're not as fragile as I feared they'd be.
Yeah. All right. So go ahead, Jay.
Jay had a
point. I loved it. He threw that interception in the third. It was 19-14, I believe. So it was only a 5-point difference. So. He did it. I think I cheered harder when he threw that pick than when Kenneth Walker dabbed up Naylor going 94 to the house. Like, I was just like, he can throw interceptions late when it's close. I loved to see that. He did respond accordingly, but I love that he's got that late game vulnerability. I'm going to rely on that in a couple weeks.
You have got hate in your heart, sir.
You do.
When it comes to Michigan, I do. Yes, I do.
Rusty, before we get to Red Wings, you had a question.
I had a question to you guys. Because the answer for me is no. Would you have Michigan ranked higher than Michigan State right now?
No, fuck no. That is a joke. I think they do it on purpose. Because maybe like you guys lose to Northwestern in 2 weekends. It's like, oh, top 10 team went down. They want that shock value. Michigan should be ranked higher than Michigan. Michigan State should be ranked higher than Michigan.
No, you said it. You can't take it back.
I'm going to go against you. I'm going to say no, Michigan State should not be ranked higher than Michigan for one thing and one thing only.
Just now, one.
They were not a good team this year. They were a lot better on paper than they were on the field. But I'm going to give you one game each team has played to show you why one of them's higher than the other. Michigan played Washington. Mm-hmm. Michigan State played the Hilltoppers. Justin, you played a community school as a banner game. You don't get to be. You're not getting higher than Michigan off of that. Michigan's record or Michigan's schedule has not been a fluff schedule. Not that State's has either, but you guys played the Hilltoppers. You didn't play like a team that could potentially win their own conference. So for me, no, you're not higher than us. Are you right now the best? Like, if the game was 2 days from now, I would say yes. Michigan State is the better team right now if we line them up. But you haven't played the record to be able to do it. It's the same reason why I don't get why everybody gets so hyped for Alabama when they're playing like Tennessee Tech and then like Mary's Women College 2 weeks in a row and blowing them both out. So
They got respect on their name.
You guys are a better football team right now. If we had to line it up, it would be very hard for me to say Michigan comes out of this with a decisive win. You guys have so much offense.
We'll keep chopping. Don't you worry.
You're not getting the higher ranking than us. The schedule doesn't
talk-isms.
Tuck, what's that? Tuck coming. Tuck coming.
I said, don't use the Tuckisms.
Dude, it's the woodshed. This you guys guy, are coming to the woodshed.
Chopping. Come so to the woodshed.
In all this talking, I got confused. You think no Michigan should be ranked higher, Russ?
No, I would have Michigan State higher right now.
That's fine.
Your point about Washington is fair, but also in week three, then Michigan State played Miami and Michigan played Northern Illinois, who I wouldn't put all that different than Western Kentucky.
Yeah. So, That's fair.
And it's mostly on same opponents, right? We have Rutgers to look at. We have Nebraska to look at. Michigan State looked better collectively against those two teams than Michigan did. Granted, it's not a huge margin, but neither is.
I will give you something. I agree. And I completely forgot about Miami. So that's a fair counterpoint. I'll give you something. And this is not a controllable thing. This is pure luck. Michigan State also hasn't had their number one contributing player go down.
Oh, right.
Bell was
that's part of the ranking.
No, I get that. That's what I'm saying. So I think that's another reason though. Michigan State looks so good and health is a totally unforeseeable thing. And it's not something you can control, but I think if Naylor or Walker go down, even for a short period of time, I think the offense looks that much noticeably different that you're talking about a Michigan team that going into the season had it figured out. They wanted these two in the backfield running it like crazy. And then when we needed to space it out, Bell on the outside, get him the ball. Mm-hmm. We don't have that anymore, so it's a little bit of a scramble.
So the committee's giving you guys a pity ranking. That's what I'm hearing. You guys got a pity ranking.
I'm not here for that.
Oh, God, I can't. He just needs to sit down for a little bit. We're going to talk about Red Wings, and then we'll bring Justin back
in. Oh, my God, that'd kill him.
Don't do that to me. Hey, all right, here we go. If the shoe was on the other foot, and you guys had your Kenneth Walker and your Naylor, which you don't, but if you did, I would allow you guys to be as annoying as you'd like.
Ball.
I would allow it.
I don't believe you.
I don't believe a word of it. Let's see how this week goes. If you guys are 7 or 6-1, let's see how much more confidence you have. I think you're 7-0. I really do. But if you're 6-1, let's see how confident you are. This is still a game you have to win. You still got to play four quarters of football. So we'll see what happens. Moving on. I know. I'm very excited. So if I'm very excited, I can't imagine these other two. This is like a national holiday for these guys. Red Wings hockey is back in Detroit. And I don't know if you guys will agree, but I think it's not too far to say this might be one of the more exciting opening weeks we've had in a while. Because guess what? Our team, some of them aren't even old enough to rent a car. And that's very exciting. Because we haven't had that in a while. Most of our team consists of guys who literally are about to start receiving AARP checks. So it's very, very exciting. Look, Lucas Raymond made the starting team. Mo Sider made the starting roster. Bobby Ryan didn't make the starting roster. I still don't fully understand it, but it is what it is. I want to ask you guys, though, first and foremost, for anything else, how exciting is that number one line of Bertuzzi, Larkin, and Raymond going to be here in Detroit, Jay?
It'd be better if it was 100% vaccinated.
North.
That's a good point. I'm going to enjoy it. I think Bertuzzi is going to enjoy that type of production. But where my focus is, it's a little deeper than that because I've got some question marks elsewhere. But you know what? It's going to be something to look forward to. They're going to be on the starting line, right? I mean, they're going to be on the faceoff of any game. Right. Unless we're going to have like a fourth line bra, like, you know, Tortorella somewhere and we got to start a fight when we start a game. But it's going to be what we need to see on this team is just some excitement to keep us activated and watching.
Yeah. OK. Rusty.
I cannot wait for it. That. Screw it. I'll say it. Lucas Raymond is going to be the most talented line mate that Dylan Larkin has had since Zetterberg retired. And I'm so excited for it. I mean, do you want to say Mantha? Maybe.
No,
I don't think he got to play with Vrana for more than like two games.
Yeah.
Mantha, Vrana, did him and Zadina ever pair up?
For a little bit, but I'm taking Raymond over Zadina.
Oh,
right.
I'm just trying to cycle through the people that he had my first instinct isn't to argue with you with you. Believe me, I'm not trying to be like, oh, no, you're wrong, and let me prove it. I'm just trying to Yeah, no, I Verano would be the only one I would say maybe, mm-hmm. maybe. But yeah, he has, let's put it this way. Raymond has all the potential right now to be the best line mate he's had thus far. Mantha was really good, but Justin just didn't like Mantha enough to support that theory.
Right.
No, I still don't. Oh, no, past tense. I still don't like him.
Oh. Larkin, Mantha, and Bertuzzi were only like a top 10 line in the league in terms of goal share and shot share, but
not in my history, they weren't.
Don't let emotions get in the way of a good story here.
Yeah. And then on the backside, you have Mo Sider coming in on the blue line. Mm-hmm. Have either of you guys seen the pairings yet? Do we know?
Mm-hmm.
Is he first pairing?
So we'll see in actual usage. DeKaiser and Hronek have been listed as the first pairing, but we'll see how actual usage goes. For what it's worth, Letty and Sider, the second pairing. Letty's on the first power play, Sider's on the second power play. Okay. So maybe they're the second quote-unquote power unit because they're getting more special teams work there. And then Stahl and Lindstrom are the third pairing right now.
Yeah, you lost me after Hronek and Waste of Space, but I'm with you.
That is assistant captain Waste of Space.
Yeah,
we're
going to get to that here in a minute. And then, of course, you know, new goalies in between the pipes. Exciting there. Should be a good time. We can look out into the stratosphere of this upcoming season, and we kind of have, and I think we will over the next couple weeks. But I want to more focus on tonight, on this game. Tampa Bay Lightning, who did not look good against the Pittsburgh Penguins the other night.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of that weird kind of barometer because this is the Iser plan already assembled versus the Iser plan in assembly. So it's still very much a finished product takes on the product in work. And we're still fine tuning it. This is kind of a perfect thing because you could see what he's built going against what he built previously. So when you guys look at this, how much of that are you actually looking at saying, all right, I can see why this guy's on the team because he kind of filled that role Eisman's already, you know, taken care of. But two, how exciting is it just to have this Red Wings hockey team taking on a former Stanley Cup champion who appears to be not 100% right now? I'll let either of you go.
I mean, Tampa's a little vulnerable. And let's not forget, they just lost an entire line out of their middle six in this past offseason. And that's going to give you a chance, like looking at the roster construction here, how they want to do their lines. You've got your nominal second and third line with Suter, Fabry, Zadina, and then Rasmussen, Ernie, Meskov, and you're hunting matchups with this. So Tampa Bay has shown us, look, they have the top line. You're not going to beat the top line. Larkin's line is going to come out. They're going to try. But what I'm watching is how well those two lines can get their job done. If the Suter line can hunt those easy matchups and take advantage of some offensive situations, and can Rasmussen's line shut down the secondary offense? And if they can, that's going to be your barometer for the entire season. So it's super exciting to be able to go against more or less a best case day one when you're all healthy and go, we've got our plan. Let's go see it. And if they show well, look, I'm not calling for playoffs because I don't think it's going to happen, but it'll be a more enjoyable season than you think if those two lines can do their job right.
So we're in lockstep. You mentioned two names that I'm highly interested in. Suter scored a hat trick against us last year when he was with Chicago. And then he comes in here and supplants Rasmussen as the starting center for the third line. Or for the second line, rather, and Rasmussen goes down to the third line as the center.
Mm-hmm.
Rasmussen needs to be the second center, but he might not be on this team, which I think that's very telling, that this young guy comes in and takes Rasmussen's spot. So I'm watching that. Also with Nemestikov, and I don't even know this gentleman, but Roan, you know, Giovanni Smith is not sniffing that side of the wing at all because he's got those two guys ahead of him, and he's actually scratched. So for me... it is the second, third, and fourth lines like Russ is speaking on. And then when you have Tampa Bay basically lose an entire line, it opens up the ability to watch what we're going to see tonight. So I think it's very telling. But my eyes have been very focused on Rasmussen. I think that he was, what, a second-round pick? Maybe even a first, if I remember correctly?
He was the ninth overall pick.
And he's the third center on this team. And he got supplanted by a new guy who just joined the club.
And that might be his ceiling.
That's a problem. That's how thin we are up the middle. It's our first line, second line, and the second one's a new guy. Because Filppula's gone. I mean, like, I have a problem up the middle on this team, big time. Defense, okay. I love it. Defense is very staggered. I think Mo Sider and Letty, the Mo Letty line, that's going to be our number one line this year.
The Mo Letty line, I like
it. Mo Letty. Mo Letty.
All right.
Mo Letty, no problems. Mo Letty, no problems. Put it on a t-shirt.
All right. Here's what I want now. I want the prediction for the game. Give me the final score. But I also want you guys to look in the crystal ball and give me who gets the first goal for the Red Wings and who's the assist on it.
You're stealing my segment.
That's fine. Then you know what? We'll hold off on that. That's completely fine. We can hold off on it. Like I said, I had a little surprise topic I wanted to get to real quick. But before we do, I said we weren't going to get too crystal ball-y here looking way ahead, but I'm going to ask real quick. Knowing what we know about who's on this roster right now, knowing that we'll probably see some changes throughout the year, I'm sure we'll see some guys flip-flop lines, go up, go down. It is what it is. Give me, in order for what Yzerman's done the last couple of years to feel successful, give me the bottom line this team has to do in order to feel like we're moving in the right direction, Russ.
Oof. Raymond Sider have to play at least 60 games. Valeno has to play at least 50 games. And someone currently in the top six, I'll say, has to be traded to make room. Because Vrana is coming back, and who does he displace? He's not displacing Zadina or Raymond, hopefully, right? If he is, then something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
So then, hey, maybe he's kicking Domestikov off, and then he's shipped off somewhere, and Fabry goes down there, and then you have straight value in Fabry, right? So that I don't have a win total for you because I don't think at the end of the year I'm going to look at the number of wins and go, well, that was a successful season or not. It's directly related to Raymond, Sider, Valeno. How have they performed? Have they been NHL ready? Because that gap up the middle, Valeno hopefully is going to be one of the answers to that.
Yeah.
And if we don't see him at all this year, the clock's really ticking. Guys that don't make it up by their fourth year usually don't ever successfully.
That's fair.
And he's 1 year away from that.
No, that's fair. That's completely fair. Jay?
I mean, I don't want to act like this was my thought. I heard it on another podcast that does a lot of hockey. It's 32 Thoughts, the podcast.
Oh, I've heard of them.
What they focused on is Larkin's timeline. And I think it speaks to what Russ is just saying. If we don't get these other draftable pieces to actually perform, you got to start thinking that a window a little bit starts closing on Larkin, that he's going to just be replaced with another captain in the future, and this team's going to win without him eventually. He'll be on this team forever, don't get me wrong. But it seems like there's a talent stop from when we have Larkin and Zetterberg and Datsyuk, and then we've got this lull, and now we've got younger pieces like Raymond and Sider, and maybe Gustav and Lindstrom, if he becomes, you know, a permanent defensive player on this team. I'm more so watching, can we do something sooner than later? Because Larkin could go on this team without winning a cup.
That's fine.
It's very feasible.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of with both of you. The win total didn't really come into play when I was trying to put this together. I mean, don't get me wrong, they can't go out and have a 20 and like 60 record, because that to me is just a backwards all the way. But look, at the end of the day, a winning record would go a long way, I think. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think that's a great thing to have. But for me, I'm the same way as you guys. I need to see what Raymond, Sider, Valeno, Zadina. Zadina's been here for a bit, but he's still on that watch list. I need to see all these guys take big steps forward to show me, okay, you've got that young nucleus. Now let's start putting the pieces around it, whether it's veteran presence, you know, like Russ, like you said, trade for value in the future. I need to see that, because that to me, and it goes with the Pistons too, that to me is a sign of the future, is that they're putting the right steps forward to improve. They know this isn't the year, but next year and the year after have to have much more potential than this year does, put it that way. So we'll see what comes of it. Before we get to start to solve these better of the week, have a little surprise for him. We've talked about this guy on the show numerous times over the years, and last night he did something, so I got to bring it up and have a little fun with it. Last night, Alexander Ovechkin, tied Marcel Dion for fifth all-time in goals, 731. Okay. That puts him 10 back of Brett Hull, about 35 back of Jaromir Jagr, and a ways back of Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky. And that's fine. But the question is, guys, and I think it's a – oh, I got to get this to work now. I think it's a fair question to ask. Can Ovi catch Gretzky? To give you a little bit to ponder, if I can get my things to move. Over the last 8 seasons, Ovi has hit 45-plus goals 6 times. He didn't do it this past year. Actually, he hit 45 this past year. He hit 24 this past year in a shortened season. And in 2016, he had 33 goals. Other than that, the lowest he's done in the last 8 years is 48 goals. So at this particular moment, he sits 163 goals away from tying Wayne Gretzky all time. I see Russ calculating in his head, working hard on it. Jay's just smiling and nodding. It tells me Jay has already either dismissed this or he already has the answer rare and ready to go.
No, so I'm Jay, just drunk.
That's fair. So Jay, I'll ask you first. Can Alexander Ovechkin, who sits, I believe, right now at 36 years of age, been in the league since 2005, 2006, can Alexander Ovechkin catch Wayne Gretzky?
Russian machine never breaks.
There it is.
Is the expression here. Yeah, he will. I when I saw him pass Dion last night, he'll get 30 this year. And when we close out this season, he'll be number 3 on that list.
Well, 30 this year. 30 this year. He needs 35 this year to tie Jagr. So only 36 this year to catch Jagr.
He'll pass it. This man is destined to do it. Ovechkin's doing it. It's going to be the best thing. If you love hockey or not, for us, it's going to be amazing. This will be the best hockey moment in my entire fandom of being a fan of hockey. This will be literally the best thing I'll ever see. Literally is when he does this. Literally, Russian machine never breaks.
Russian machine never breaks. Rusty?
Contemplate this for me for just 1 second. The goalies in Wayne Gretzky's era still didn't go to – Butterfly still wasn't a thing, right? The point totals were absolutely ridiculous. Alex Ovechkin has a higher goals per game rate than Wayne Gretzky in their careers, 0.61 to 0.6. He needs 5.5 years at a 30-goal pace to catch him. Can he get higher than that? If he gets around 40 this year, hey, that 5.5 goes down, right? If he gets above 30 the next year, we're talking less than 5. Is anyone going to be surprised if Ovi's playing at 41?
No,
if
not
he
at
gets
all.
Close. No, if he is less than 100 away and he's 39 years old, he's coming back for 41. He's coming back for 42.
Yep.
He's going to get it. If nothing else, they'll just trot him out. He'll play 12 minutes a game and 10 of it'll be on the power play, and he'll just sit there with a stick in his waist, waiting for clappers. Yeah, he's gonna get it. It's gonna be roughly 5 years from now, 2026. That's when it's going to happen.
I've got goosebumps. My body is crawling with excitement.
Like I said, I was doing math off the fact that he's hit 50 goals, 1, 2, 3, 4 times in the last 8 years. He's got 49 and 48 the other two. And then, like I said, he had 33 one year and 24 on a 45. So think about it. He played half the games last year and had 24 goals. You times that by two, he's at 48 again. So it's that fact that he's almost hit 50 goals 8 years. Six out of 8 years. So you do the math of even if he's a little off and he has 40, well, if you do 40 times 4, that's 160, and that puts him 4 goals shy of or 3 goals shy of Wayne Gretzky. I don't think he's going to go, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to retire. So it's that thing. I think he does do it. I do. The unfortunate thing is you just ended my segment early because I expected some kind of resistance out of one of you. And
no,
I didn't,
I want the hype.
I know that's fine. No. I didn't get it at all. Because my follow-up question was Gordie Howe's at 801. Does he even get to 800? But that seems like something he could potentially do by the middle of next year.
He's gonna do it tomorrow.
But weird thing, and I get the kind of player he is, but I saw this and it kind of threw me off just thinking about when you look at stat lines for players. A little weird that he's got almost 200 more goals than he does assists? Like, does Obi just not pass? Is what I'm getting out of this. Obi just doesn't like to pass the puck.
You don't have to pass when you score.
It's true. It's very true. But even Wayne Gretzky's got more assists than he does goals. Like, it's that it's that thing of, like, and there's nothing wrong with it. When you have 730 goals and you're 160 away from catching the greatest player of all time, you don't have to pass the puck if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. It's just that fact that the guy's got, you know, 731 goals and he's got 590 assists. It's like, that's a two to one ratio of I don't pass the puck. So
what he go ahead, Russ. Go ahead.
What I would love to see is how bad that ratio would look if you took away the assists he got because it was the rebound of one of his shots.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, there's the one where he's like sliding on his back and he hooks it around. It's like he got the assist year. And then the assist. On
he had
that
the tinted visor. He had the yellow laces. It was the hawk in the blue and white that had like this weird cut off the breast. That jersey is so sexy. Oh my God. I love it.
I expected a lot of resistance on this one. I'm actually glad we're all on the same page here. It's insane. I think Ovi absolutely does it. The thing is, are we likely, because it seems like Ovi's got the personal goal in line, but does Ovi finish his career with one cup? Does Ovi find a way to get one more along the way?
I don't think so.
Is it a Washington thing, or is Ovi a guy that finishes out in Washington, or does he maybe go cup chasing towards the end of his career?
I think personally, I think this Washington team's on the downtrend. You're not really going to see a lot of it this year, but Backstrom can't stay healthy. Kuznetsov hasn't been good in a couple of years. Hopefully he can rebound a bit, but TJ Oshie is getting up there too. This is a team on the way down, and they're going to hand Ovi a bucket of money and just go 8-year contract.
Yeah,
keep don't going. Lose. It'll take you till you're 45. I don't care. Here you go. Never leave.
Jay?
Yeah, I don't foresee him ever going cup chasing. I think he stays. I can't name a young winger other than what Verana was on that team that's coming up in that system to complement how Oshie and Backstrom have been in the past. Like, I also don't see that. Cause like the next big thing is goaltending. They've had Holpe's, they've got Vitek Vanek, they've got Ilya Samsonov. And between one of those two guys, someone has to emerge as the starting goalie. They're both kind of 1A, 1B. So it's just Ovi dragging his points and his team up. And then Anthony Mantha, he stood in front of the net. He took a puck off the shoulder, and then Ovechkin scored on that rebound. Mantha, just stay there. Be the pylon and rack up those assists.
That's an assist, baby. That's playmaking.
Took it off the collarbone.
since we don't get to do this very often, I guess I get to do it. Breaking news. Colorado's Gabriel Landeskog suspended 2 games for boarding.
That's my fantasy guy.
Yeah, that was all good for
excellent.
You.
Excellent. Excellent.
Oh, good for you.
That was unnecessary hit.
Well, Jay, it seems like that time of the show where we know how hard you work all week, ignoring everything else in your life to search the gambling sites.
Yes.
It is time for Sergeant Salty's Bet of the Week.
All right, quick little recap. I went 2-0, but you guys already know that. I had the Nebraska plus 3.5 and the Bills. You both split the difference on each other, both picking up 1 win, 1 loss. We're sitting at 5-3 for me and 4-4 for both of you guys. So
of course he adds himself to this just to win. That's what he does.
I thought Nebraska was 3.5. Huh?
Yeah. No.
I thought it was 2.5. Never mind.
So we're sitting all pretty close, but I've got some fun for today. So real quickly, and Eric, you touched on this early, so I'm happy our brains are connected. All right.
Oh God, help me.
Wings tonight. I'm going to give you some plus odds on any time scorers for the Wings tonight against Vasilevsky. All right.
Okay.
You got to pick one for me. Dylan Larkin +230, and he is the only wing, like the first wing that pops up on the list. It's Larkin at +230. Score a goal tonight. Lucas Raymond +375. And I did this for Eric. Mo Sider +900 from the blue line. So there's some options for you. Another option, and we're just going to keep picking two because I like this pick two strategy. So MSU over under 48, because I gave you some stats earlier on how we can score 35 just by ourselves. So you can take the over there or the under if you want to fade me. That's fine. The last one. Alabama has not lost two games in a row since 2015. And it came when they, it was the Cotton Bowl. And then the game before that, I think they lost to Clemson. So Bama hasn't done that in like forever, 6 years. Covering 17 points against Mississippi State. I've laid some money on it because I just, Alabama's not losing two. And I think they're going to cover the spread. But those are your options there. So you got Larkin, you got Raymond, you got Sider. Get the over-under with Michigan State this weekend. And then do you dare cover the spread with Saban versus Mississippi State? So, Eric, Russ, if either of you feel inclined, coming out the gate, pick it and go.
Can I get the odds for Fabry anytime scorer?
Yeah, Fabry was on there. I almost offered that up too. Let me grab that. I think he sits in between Raymond and Larkin. So well, it's while not you're too far off.
While you're grabbing that, I can make my prediction because I have a little insider information.
Ooh, cheater. Cheater.
Friend of the show, Darren McCarty, talked to him today, talked to him about the game, and he gave me the answer I was looking for. Bet on Lucas Raymond to score a goal in this first game. So I'm going to take Lucas Raymond. I am going to bet against Alabama. I just feel the need to do that as often as possible. So I will take that, and I don't. What was the spread on the Michigan State game?
48
over under is 48, but you're taking Mississippi State in the points. You want the 17 from them?
Yep. 48. Yeah, no, I don't think it gets that high. Like I said, 30. I think I said 30. Oh no, I guess that's 54. Yeah, so 30. Yeah, no, I don't see it getting that high. I don't. I'm sorry.
So you're picking three picks, even though I said two, and last week I said pick one, and you picked two.
Okay.
I love what you're doing.
Fine. Get rid of Michigan State. I don't care. I'll take the points in Mississippi State, and I'll take Lucas Raymond.
All right. I love your two. Russ, you said Fabry goal?
Yeah.
Plus 300.
300.
So right in between. Oh, yeah.
That's not bad.
Perfect. Yes, I'm taking Fabry.
Wait, you're altering it. You're not even picking his picks.
No. He said, or you can take someone else if you'd like.
I gotta start.
It was in fine print. He said it out loud. So I
love rule breaking myself. So I encourage you to keep fucking with the rules each week. I'm okay with this.
I didn't break any rules. You could say you said you could pick someone else.
This show would go so much better if I listened when Justin talked.
Right.
And to
answer Eric's question from 3.5 hours ago, Zadina's going to have the assist on that Fabry goal.
Love it.
Even strength here. Calling that one. I think MSU hits the over there, and I think Bama wins this game, but I feel way more comfortable saying that Bama's going to cover 17 than MSU covering the 48 because. Is there a world where MSU goes up 35-7 and just sits on it? Yeah, there's very much a rule. I don't think there's as close of a possibility that Bama doesn't come out absolutely pissed and just try to absolutely kick the shit out of Mississippi State. I wouldn't want to be the team playing Alabama the week after they lost the second time since 1973? Like, no. Yeah.
I'm going to give Justin body convulsions because I'm going to say it's Lucas Raymond's goal, but I'm going to say most Sider to Dylan Larkin to Lucas Raymond. So two of our young guys are going to get points in one play.
You can't do that.
The entire city of Detroit
will explode.
You better parlay that on the app and actually put some money.
If I can, I will because that'll be amazing.
Can.
Oh, well,
you can.
I'm going to have to look into that. You understand this app way better than I do, by the way. I just don't.
I'm a degenerate. I'm taking MSU in the over, and I'm taking Bama -17. So I'm going to steer clear of the first goal scorer for the Wings. I'm just going to stick to football.
You and kill we'll joy. Hockey.
Hey, I'm up a little bit. There's some risk in what I'm taking on my side. So unless you want me to take a player, I will take a player, and I'll get rid of MSU. So that's the easy one.
Well, for humor me, at least. I'm not saying take the bet, but who would you pick for your goal? Put your money on the board here, at least in metaphorical sense.
Larkin? Yeah.
You're saying nice things about Dylan Larkin? I could get used to this.
Larkin's got pressure, man. He's on that first line. He's got to take on Stamkos and Kucherov today. Give me Larkin getting that first goal. I'll get rid of MSU because that over is – they can put the over at 50. We'll hit it. Give me Larkin +230, first goal scorer.
All right. I like it. Before we wrap up the show, time for quick calculations with the stat man.
Yes. This,
nice and easy for you here.
I'm so excited.
At the rate he's going, how long until Justin runs out of money? that would be a
three
great,
weeks ago.
Yeah, that would be a great one. But I'm gonna actually make it a little easier for you. Quick calculations. You got Lucas Raymond, mm-hmm. Mo Sider,
mm-hmm.
we'll say Cade Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna add him in just for the foresight of the future, Spencer Torkelson.
Okay.
Who statistically finishes highest for rookie of the year voting in their sport?
Oh, Cade Cunningham.
Think so.
I think 100% Cade Cunningham. Torkelson's gonna have a tough go of it just with the position he plays. He's not a pitcher, he's not a shortstop, he's not a center fielder, so he's already fighting an uphill battle from that, even though his bat is on track to be phenomenal. Raymond and Sider, I want them to.
Yeah.
They should be in there, but it's tough going against top overall picks, number one overall guys, and they're staring down having to face Cole Caulfield, who already has playoff experience, to try and win there. So Cade Cunningham, I don't see the roadblocks for him, and that's going to be a team he can plug right in the center of from day one. Feature him. You need the counting stats to get the voters for that. So, yeah, give me Cade.
Jay, you can pick anyone but Cade Cunningham.
Damn it.
Yes!
Well, I know what Sider and Raymond have to face, so I'll go with what I don't know. I have no idea who's up against Torkelson, so give me Tork. He's the only guy in my brain right now in the MLB.
That's a good thing to hear. I also, yeah, Cade's the safe bet. I was hoping I could maybe get Russ to overthink that, and he caught Cade fast enough that it didn't work, but it is what it is. You can see it right there on the screen. That's the show. We got to go. My thanks, as always, to Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
I still have money in my account. I went like 12-2 this weekend, so I'm sitting pretty. So don't worry about my financials. I'm good.
That's all we need to hear. And as always, he makes us sound a lot smarter than we really are, the Statman, Russ Ivanek.
Oh, it's been another blast. And Detroit Red Wings are back. Get ready for the losses. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, Detroit Red Wings are back. And this won't be the first time you hear me say it. I'm going to probably say it a lot, but I think I'm going to enjoy the game tonight with a nice hard cider. Yes, that's right. Mo Sider, baby. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.